So today we are going to talk about the Philip experiment, where researchers set out to do something woo-woo. They wanted to try to create a ghost, but they also didn't think it would be a ghost. So we're going to talk about how they set up the experiment, the results, and the impacts, and a possible ghost dolphin named Silk. Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we want you to join us while we creep. We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about a very strange experiment that took place in the 70s, where they may have created a ghost. And I say that with a question mark on purpose.
Boy, don't you.
We're going to talk a lot about this.
This is one of my favorite episodes we've done in a long time.
Oh, I'm excited for that. Mm-hmm. It's not a typical haunting that we've talked about before, and it's not really a traditional ghost story either. It's something completely different. And the experiment involved a group of people who set out with the intention to simulate paranormal activity. And they may have succeeded, again, with a question mark. There are a lot of theories that we're going to talk about at the end as to what might have happened with this experiment. And we've been so excited to talk about them. We took forever to start recording because we're just into them.
Yeah, we actually had to be like, okay, no, we need to record because this is like literally what we're about to do. We need to talk about the thing on the thing, you know?
Right. And also, if we decide to turn into a strange accent person, who knows what it'll be when it comes out, it's because of a video that we're going to post that you have to watch because it's something.
And if it's possible, I would suggest that if you can, go to the show notes really quick. It's going to be the first thing that's listed under the description of the episode. Go watch that video. It will give you such a different experience as to what we're talking about, because we didn't watch that video before we did the research. So it was like, oh. It like reframed everything, at least for me it did. And so I would so thoroughly suggest if you can watch that first to go do so. It's only like 7 to 8 minutes long. It's like a fucking trip. But like, you'll also understand why we might have a strange accent, because there's just an inexplicable 70s woman accent that exists. And then also, I need you to know that I forever will believe that if more than three people are saying the same thing at the same time in the 1970s, it will sound like a cult. It doesn't matter what you're saying. It sounds like cult behavior.
I just love the grainy video.
There are so many close-ups of fingies in it that I questioned whether it was AI, because there were so many fingers in this fucking video.
Yes. It's a video. And, you know, she said to watch it first. I think it's fun to watch it after, too. So, like, either way, whenever you watch it is great. Yeah. Because it makes it, I think, hilarious if you watch it after. Yes. After we, like, talk about the science between this.
Yes.
And that.
We're going to have a good time either way, but definitely check it out at some point.
Yes. Also, before we start, just because it's kind of fun, I have to ask you, would this be something that you would consider trying? So like a scientist comes up and they're like, hey, Lindsay, I want to conduct an experiment about ghosts. You in?
I would absolutely be hyped to be a part of any experiment about ghosts. It is worth noting, though, that when we do our investigations, one of the first things that we do is we call it for science, and we test all of our tools in the areas where we're going to use them before we're trying to do anything, just to see if we get false positives, because we don't want to like simulate fake paranormal activity. We're curious. So sometimes that means we get intelligent responses, and sometimes it means we don't. We aren't there to like be content creators. We just happen to be people who like spooky investigations, and we also have a podcast, so we're like, we'll talk about this sometimes, right? So like, we want to have an experience, so we're like, we want it to be genuine. And I think that that's the interesting part of it, is that we want it to be something that could be replicable by somebody else who comes there next, right? Maybe they think they're talking to the same thing or not. So I feel like we do experiments-ish when we go to paranormal places. Like, is it in a lab? No, but unless it's a haunted lab, that's not where it is.
Laboratory. You'll get it when you watch the video.
You'll know when you know. Oh, so just like some caveats. One, we're going to pull out some tangents and or just like where we've said the same spicy thing, perhaps maybe too much, you know, we'll put it at the end. There is also just a little song, just a little ditty that I wrote while we were recording. If you're going to get mad that I'm singing, then just don't listen to it. It's at the end, like truly like the end and after the outro. So like, if you think that you're going to have some feelings about that, just don't listen to it. Because you know what? We're podcasters. I'm not a singer. I'm not having a concert.
But she could
except
be.
Except for you point. At the end of this episode.
Perfect. Love it. And last thing before we get started, Lindsay just got back from Arizona. She was here.
Yeah.
It was very hot. She survived.
Oh, I loved it. It was just the right amount of hot. It's cold here. I'm tired of being cold.
That's fair. That's fair. But we are combing through all of our video and audio and every recording of every kind. It will take some time, but we will have a follow-up episode about the two places that we investigated because both were very busy.
Yes. And you will likely get sneak peeks of that footage sooner if you follow us on anything, because we've been trying to make sure we're posting more footage and sharing that kind of stuff, because we have this like wealth of video and audio from all our investigations and adventures. And so if you're curious about that kind of stuff, you'll see tons of it on our social media.
You will. All right. So let's start talking about this experiment. In 1972, a group of researchers from the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, or TSPR, which is also a mouthful, so we're just going to say the society here and there. Well, they were in Canada, and they began planning an experiment. Their goal was to see if human expectation and belief alone could create genuine and replicable paranormal activity. What an experiment.
I love that. But one of the things that I like the most about this experiment quite in particular is that the people who were conducting it didn't think that they were going to be communicating with a ghost. And that'll make more sense in a moment when Amanda's talking you through like how it works. But they didn't believe that ghosts were real. They basically believed that when people saw an apparition, they were hallucinating, even if they were in a group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if all of them saw
it. Yeah, so like if everyone saw the same apparition, group hallucination. If you saw it on your own, just you're hallucinating. I think it's fascinating that they did this experiment being like, ghosts aren't real. And one of the things that I've noticed a lot with people when they hear about like ghosty investigations and stuff like that is people will be like, oh, I'm really skeptical. I don't believe in any of that. And they treat that as though that is a more intellectually superior response to the unknown. Mm-hmm. Where for me, I'm like, oh, that feels super close-minded because how the fuck do you know?
Right.
I've been pushed by a ghost. I feel like I know. You are saying that you don't believe in it. Sweetie, that's a belief.
Yeah.
And you don't have to believe my experience. That's completely fine. And you don't have to believe my beliefs. But don't act as though skepticism is the most intellectual and quote-unquote smart baseline belief when it comes to the unknown. But anyway,
that's fair.
Back to this experiment. I'm so excited about this.
It's fun. It's fun. So the project was led by what most documents call Dr. A.R.G. Owen. And the entire time, every time I read his name, I was just calling him Arg in my head.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
And then it just made it funnier. But his full name was Alan Robert George Owen, and usually went by George. And he was a respected mathematician and parapsychologist from Cambridge University. As a note, Dr. Owen was pretty into strange events as well, and even spent years studying things like poltergeists.
And just interesting fact, when people are talking about poltergeists, a lot of people do believe that poltergeist activity is actually stemming from an individual as opposed to an external whatever. So it would, that kind of tracks thus far.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like that he spent so much time looking into poltergeists. Mm-hmm. But to really enforce his science background, he got a degree in mathematics and in physics in 1940, then went to Cambridge and got his PhD, and then also ended up giving lectures in mathematics and genetics there. So like super science scientist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Just to give him that credibility. Additionally, his wife, Iris, was also said to lead the experiment with him. She was a British-born registered nurse and a psychical researcher. She, too, studied poltergeist cases, just like Dr. Owen. And there's an old article that I found. It's without context. It has no name or published date or anything, but it was an interview with her, supposedly. I'm saying that, you know, just in case. But it showed that she was very skeptical of paranormal activity as well. And she even argued how paranormal activity could be explained by something that the living may have been doing. So usually, like, she could find a reason for what the paranormal activity was.
Fair.
But I liked that she was like, oh, logically, it might have been this. It could be this. It wasn't just immediately, that's a ghost, you know?
I think that that is a good baseline approach to any type of paranormal investigation looking experiment. Because if your first assumption is it's a ghost, maybe you're reinforcing your own bias. So, like, I don't necessarily think that, I actually think that that's like a prudent experimental approach, if you will.
Yeah.
But so the primary objective they were forming was to see if a group of people with their minds could work together to create a brand new spirit from just imagination and then make contact with that spirit that they imagined. We're going to talk about it more in our theory section, but you know what that is if you've been listening for a while. So This means that their intention was not to contact a spirit that already existed in some form. Not a local ghost story, not a person who they once knew. It was something that didn't exist yet.
Well, just even like a historical, not someone that lived and died. So like no one on record. It wasn't based on anyone. It was completely made up.
Yeah. A fresh person, if you will. Now, at first, this project was called the Owen Group Experiment. Rolls right off the tongue. But it's now famously known as the Philip Experiment. And the group consisted of, honestly, a pretty broad array of folks. It's like when we're going to talk about the actual professions that they had outside of this, you're not going to think, hey, this is a person who probably does ghost experiments.
For sure.
So none of them were trained mediums or claimed to have psychic abilities. And as we talk about them, we have a lot more on some than others, but we'll talk about the names and what we have about them. So the first person is Margaret Sparrow, and she was a former chairperson of Mensa in Canada. Then there was Andy and her husband, Lauren. Lauren was an industrial designer and Andy was artistic. And she even drew a picture of Philip. And we'll talk about why that was so useful in just a moment. But we also had Al Peacock, who was a heating engineer. Bernice M., who was an accountant. Dorothy O'Donnell, who was a bookkeeper. And Sydney Kay, who was a sociology student. Plus Iris Owen, who we had mentioned before. Dr. Owen and Joe Witten, a psychologist, who he also came to the meetings for the experiments and as an observer. When you watch the video, he's in it and he makes what I just could confirm as like hand motion. Like he made villain hands. Like I'm not saying he's a villain, but he definitely.
Oh, for sure.
His like.
He has villain hands.
He has villain hands because he does a lot of like the Mr. Burn, like excellent kind of fingers, but like rather than pointing up, they're pointing at you. And I don't like that. It made me deeply uncomfortable.
That's my favorite part of the video. Yeah. And that's why we will be saying laboratory when we can.
Yes, yes. Because he talked about the laboratory. He's just like, there's so many books around him. But it was almost like they were like, hey, just put a lot of books around you. It doesn't matter what it's about. And they turned the spines in different directions. I just spit. It's so funny.
We've watched this video so much and we're having the best time watching it.
Something new every time.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the experiment itself. The group first created a detailed biography of their quote unquote ghost. They named him Philip Aylesford. So Philip was a fictional 17th century English aristocrat, and his story was crafted deliberately to include some general historical accuracy, but also contain some intentional contradictions. In short, he was born in 1624 in England. He had an early military career, and he was even knighted by 16 years old.
Wow. Philip.
He became BFFs with Charles II and even worked as a spy during the English Civil War. I assume they said BFFs. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Makes sense to me. He was married to Dorothea, and he was super unhappy in his marriage. I've seen some sources that, like, explained it a little bit more, that, like, she was, like, a beautiful, cold woman. But, like, I don't know if that's what they actually discussed or if people have been elaborating a bit.
I love that.
But while married to Dorothea, he fell in love with a Romani woman named Margot, who was later accused of witchcraft and burned at the stake. Poor Margot. Philip was so depressed after she was killed that he died by suicide in 1654 at the age of 30. As they created the story, they discussed the way that his home would have looked like, his appearance, his personality, details about his wife and his lover, and just every part of his story that could have details, they made it up, like, as a group.
Okay, okay. So they wrote his lore out, like, you're making a D&D character, is basically what they did, but, like, with a ghost, quote-unquote.
Right, right. They even added a ton of drama, because every story needs some good drama, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, his wife found out about the affair, and she's the one that accused Margot of being a witch, and that Margot bewitched her husband. Then, because of it, Margot was tried and executed, which led Philip to ending his own life. And I even saw that he didn't, like, speak up for Margot during the trial because he was afraid to lose his reputation and possibly his possessions. So, like, they went deep, deep into the story.
Yeah, they also talked about another reason was that he might be worried about being outed as a spy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just so many, they had so many meetings. We're going to talk about all their meetings. But, like, they had time to really develop the story. But ultimately, they wanted to give him a reason that, like, his spirit would remain. So they gave his backstory a lot of emotion. Once they had his bio complete, they moved on to the next part of the experiment, which was the seances. They gathered for a seance session around a table to try to make contact with Philip. And they did this pretty much weekly. I know that they said that there was a brief time where they didn't meet, but it was weekly. As they met, they focused their thoughts, called out Philip's name, and discussed his life in detail. They even sort of meditated on a photo that they created of Philip, which I love. Like, I saw one picture where it was like he may have been in the middle of the table so they all could just, like, stare at it as they thought of him.
I love it so fucking much.
Some sources say that they discussed details of his life and his personality, like, as they met as well, once they formed what it was. And then after some time, they almost convinced themselves that he had really lived because they were talking about this guy so much, right? And for so long.
He was, like, their made-up imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm. So for almost a year, they did this without any response. So imagine meeting with your friends once a week to sit around a table and talk about like a D&D character that you invented.
I love it. I love it.
During these early sessions, the vibe was very serious and academic.
How?
And the group concentrated intensely.
But how? How were they serious and academic? That's what I want to know. Like, how? I don't know.
Right. Because after seeing the last video of, like, how it ended up being, it's, like, wildly different. Yeah. But the first, you know, early sessions, it was very quiet. And they thought that having a quiet and focused environment would be necessary to make that contact. Now, they started to give up hope, and Dr. Owen, or Ark, he recognized their disappointment. And between him and possibly Iris, one of the two thought that maybe they should change their approach from being super serious to being more like old school spiritualism seances, which we've talked about before. And they tended to be a little more wild.
So, okay, here's what I love. I love them coming at this from a scientific angle. And they're like, we're going to study this clinically. And then they realize, oh, this doesn't work if you do it clinically. There's a reason why there's no paranormal study where they're like, and now there's a ghost in this room. There's a reason it doesn't already exist.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, we should start doing seances. Let's just do science seances. Let's just have science seances where we do seance stuff. And then we're like, but it's not a seance. And it didn't work, even if maybe it does. So to replicate the atmosphere of these classic Victorian seances, he wanted them to be able to be relaxed while still holding that collective engagement. So everyone's still focused on the same thing, but perhaps they're not all so, like, uptight, if you will. And I want you to visualize table turning, because that is one of the central things that happens over and over, is that the table itself will move in ways that it should not without human interference. And that means it will lift up. It'll tilt to one side. You'll feel the vibration of someone knocking, for example. That's not part of table turning. That's just the thing they felt. And for table turning quite specifically, everybody would be at one table. They would place their hands on it. And then some spooky things might happen afterwards. And from what we've seen, it seems like the type of table varies, which we'll talk about more at a different one later. But like in the video that we're talking about, it's very clearly a very light card table. And I want to think that there's 8 plus people standing around this like little tiny 4x4 card table with their hands on it. So everyone's super close and it's really hard to see what everyone's doing with their hands and legs. And I think that that's an important note to think about as we talk about this. Also, to achieve this more chill Victorian seance like atmosphere, they dimmed the lights, they told jokes, they sang songs, and they even made up some fun chants to encourage Philip to communicate. Because if I know anything, it's that ghosts love chants.
They do.
And so their goal was to create a psychic fuel to create the phenomena that they wanted to witness. So they're putting their collective energy into something to say, we want to talk to Philip. Mm-hmm. And they're like, the only thing that we could be talking to is Philip.
Right. And we're going to chant to encourage him.
So that's all. That's the only option. The only option here is Philip. Nothing else. If something talks back, it's Philip. It has to be. But anyway, I think it's the funniest thing.
I love them.
Okay. So let's talk about their results. Pretty much immediately after changing their approach to that Victorian seance-like vibe, in just a couple sessions, one of the seance members felt a distinct vibration coming from the table that they were all touching. Again, it was like fingies down, like next to one another on the table. Mm-hmm. And it was faint, but it was undeniable. Then one of the members asked if Philip was with them. And that's when they heard a single sharp knock on the table that echoed from the surface of the table. So kind of like, minus my mic moving, if you will, but a hard rap against the table that they were at. The group was stunned and turned silent. And then they created a simple system to talk with whatever was making the knocking sounds. One knock would mean yes, and two knocks would mean no. And then they began communicating with the newly created, freshly minted ghost, because again, it couldn't be anything else that's doing this. The only possible thing that could be happening, in their opinion, is that they made up something and that there's nothing else that could be happening right now. So they start talking to Philip. I can't say it with a straight face.
I love it. I love this so much. So using their system of knocks, they had full-blown conversations with Philip.
It must have been a long conversation. Like, can you imagine how hard it would be to, like, have a full-blown conversation in yes-nos?
Right? Well, and in the video, they were asking if he wanted beer. Like, they love beer for some reason.
They were singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
They love it.
Classic ghost
song. They can't get enough. But they asked him about his life, and they confirmed much of what they had already made up. So he had been in love with Margot, and he took his own life, for instance. Also, while doing all of this, the table did some crazy things. It would tilt on two legs, and even one at one point, without falling over. Also, when commanded, it would slide across the floor, sometimes going towards a member of the group that may have been walking around the room. So like if they got up for any reason. And the way that I read it is it wasn't like in a scary manner. It was more like playful.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think that Philip, because again, it can only be Philip.
Yes.
Is doing what they're asking. And
yes,
I think that that is one of the things that makes it inherently less scary, because they're saying, well, you do this thing, and then they do the thing. It's not like they ask a question that Philip, only Philip, does it like, and it throws the table across the room. It's more like,
right.
And, you know, like, I think that there's a difference between like a slide and like a jarring kind of like flinging, if you will.
Exactly. And remember the environment, they're singing, they're chanting, they're having a great time, right? It looked like a party to me.
Typical Tuesday night, baby.
Yeah. So one source even mentioned that they placed a piece of candy on the table at one point. And Philip moved it to, like, the table to a 45-degree angle without the candy falling off. But then when the group tried to move the table with the same piece of candy on it, it slid and fell off.
I have no reason to believe this other than my own desire to. So much like the experimenters here, I will be doing this. I will be just categorically believing that the candy that they had was an ice-cold fucking Werther's.
Oh my gosh. They're like, and Philip, hold on, let me go to the fridge. Yeah. To get the Werther's.
No, Philip makes it cold. Ghosted Werther's.
Werther's. I love that this is going to be forever now.
Anyway.
So all of this activity with the table, it moving, the candy, all of it, occurred over many seances. Other strange things began happening during the meetings as well, including the room suddenly becoming cold, lights flickering, and things like that. Common ghosty things. The group believed Philip's presence was growing stronger and more interactive. Also, between seances, some of the group members reported poltergeist phenomenon in their own homes. And I want to say this is when they kind of took a little break from it, like where they didn't meet for a while. And so Philip, with a question mark, was like, what are you doing? We got to come to our meeting.
Like, he was like literally like, knock, knock.
Yeah.
I thought we hung out on Tuesdays. It's Philip Tuesday. Where the fuck are you?
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's important to note that when they met, you know, like life happens. So it wasn't always, everyone wasn't always there. So there was times when like people might be missing. So there wasn't always the exact same makeup of people.
Mm-hmm. So the group was very excited and they wanted to share their findings with a group who was likely to be more skeptical. So they arranged to hold a session in a large hall with a live audience of 50 people.
Love it. Ghost on demand.
Imagine that video, but surrounded by an audience of 50 people watching.
I have to imagine that, like, they were at a bigger table.
No, I want smaller.
You want to imagine that they were, like, at, like, fucking, like, an end table? It's
like a Barbie table.
Like, an, yeah. Just, like, a nightstand.
Yeah. Philip, move this nightstand.
Fuck, Philip.
And to make it even more exciting, this would be filmed for a TV documentary and everything would be captured on camera.
Perfect. Perfect.
When the event finally happened, Philip made his presence known. The knocks were heard and the questions were answered. The table moved, tilted on two legs, and even levitated completely for a few moments. The audience and the crew were speechless. Now, some interesting details. One thing that the group noticed during these sessions is that Philip could only answer questions that they had already came up with in his story. So for example, his love story or his death, totally fine. He can answer yes or no questions about that. But when they asked things about like historical events that would have happened during his time period that themselves did not know the answer to, Philip would be silent and there would be no response of any kind.
If you think about a knock, right? Someone can knock at different strengths, if you will, a hard knock or like a light knock. And so for situations where they had an agreed upon answer that they thought that Philip would say or agree to, there was a very clear knock. And if they hadn't agreed on anything, just silence. But there's also that in between of where they ask a question that there's some varied opinions on. Say six people believe this, but two believe another. The knock would be lighter. So think of it as kind of like a spectrum as to like completely agreed upon facts or completely undiscussed. Wherever it fell in terms of like the group's certainty to the answer, that is how hard the knock went.
Yeah, so it was like undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of piggyback on the historical thing, right? Like things that would be known by everyone from his time. If he had been an actual ghost with a past during this time frame, he likely would have been able to provide at least some answers here and there. And it would have been things that not everyone in the group would know about history, you know, just like little things that were historical. Mm-hmm. And his inability to do so suggested that he was not actually a soul from the past. His consciousness was a direct reflection of the group's collective mind.
That is certainly one conclusion that one could draw from this.
Mm-hmm. And thinking of that, what does that sound like? Perhaps something from another episode?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That you know I love to talk about. We'll talk about it in a moment.
Right. So interestingly, in an attempt to show that the Philip experiment was replicable, another group comprised of different members of the TSPR did the same thing, but created the spirit of Lilith. And she was a French-Canadian girl who became a member of the French Resistance in World War II and was captured and shot as a spy. They all love their spies.
I was going to say that, too. I was like, they fucking loved a spy.
They just, yeah, they love that story. Within about 5 weeks, this group also began getting table movement, tapping, all the fun stuff. And researchers noticed that her knocks were more gentle than Philip's.
Isn't that interesting, the idea of like a knock signature, too?
Mm-hmm.
So it also gets a little silly. And I think that this is where they really try to hone in on the idea that this isn't a ghost. I think that they're trying to be like, no, this couldn't possibly be a ghost because this doesn't exist. And when I say this, I mean a dolphin named Silk. So TSPR has like more than just the people who we're talking about. And so there was another research group and they developed a personality for a dolphin named Silk. And part of Silk's lore was that he was afraid of sharks. So they like would ask him dolphin questions, including like, hey, are you afraid of sharks? And he was like, yeah. And then and then the original Philip TSPR research group was considering setting up like a UFO research arm of it. And so they decided to ask Philip about UFOs. As one does. Everyone knows ghosts love UFOs as well.
For sure.
And it's important to note that during this, it's mostly men asking the questions. So they ask him if he'd ever seen a UFO. And Philip's like, yeah, I have. And they're like, can you bring one here? And he's like, yeah, I can. And then the UFO gets there and begins to communicate with the researchers. And what's really, really fascinating to me is either one, they are trying to develop lore where ghost UFOs need transportation, or it's theoretically supposed to be the consciousness of a living UFO because her name was Venus. Not too surprisingly, she came from Venus, but she came from Venus in a flying saucer that she parked across the road from where they were doing their experiments. But don't worry, she had disguised it as a sports car, so no one would know.
Of course.
I just want to know, like, what series of yes or no questions did you do to get to this result? You know?
Right. I want that video.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What I wouldn't pay to be a fly on the wall, to be a ghost on the wall in this experiment. But anyway, so apparently she was stunning. They described her as having pale white skin, black hair, and green eyes. And again, they noticed that Venus's knock sounded different than Philip's distinctly. So we're talking to dolphins. We're talking to Lilith. We're talking to Philip. There's also others that they talked to as well, including one of them was apparently Santa Claus. Questionable.
Sure.
So we're getting further from science. But then they get closer to science again when they start working with other institutions. Because one of the things that they started to do was they started to invite others to join in their experiments. So it wasn't just the core group anymore. They would involve others. And at times they would travel. And one of the places they traveled was to Kent State University. And in March of 1975, they were invited there by the physics department, but they were welcomed by the college as a whole. Like the president came and greeted them when they got there. So they replicated the experiment and videotaped it as they do. And they experienced rapping and the table movement phenomena. And they even used a strain gauge to measure the upward pressure of the table when it moved. And so just again, for context, table was, you know, flat. They had their hands on top of the table and it's pushing upwards and they're measuring the force of which is pushing it upwards. And it was about a 20-pound force, which interesting. It's also interesting to note that like this is a time when they're conducting these experiments in a laboratory context. A laboratory context again. And they're using like measurement tools in a way that doesn't seem like they always were. So one of the professors that had wanted them to come out was Dr. Wilbur Franklin. And at one point, he tried to sit on the table to keep it from lifting, and it still lifted. And then while they were doing the experiments, one of the table legs broke off without any visible human interference. And as just an interesting note, we talked about a card table earlier, but this table, I'm not sure whether this was the one that was lifting or not, but this particular table was one of those like really thick and heavy laboratory tables. So it was like a chunker of a table. Like it was like hefty. It's not as though this was like a flimsy little like old table that was just like on its last leg. But it was like, this should not have happened. And then they decided during this like experimental visit, if you will. So TSPR and Kent State were like, you know, we should try metal bending. So then they start trying to bend metal like together.
I mean, yeah, that's the next logical step.
Right, because if you can create a ghost, apparently you can bend metal. And this will make more sense in a little while. This will like give some more context, but it's just interesting that they're like, it moved tables and now let's bend a gold bar. Not too surprisingly, they're unsuccessful in bending that gold bar. But as they're finishing that, one of the women participants looks down at her hand and she looks at her rings. And one of them is significantly warped in a way that it wasn't before. And another one of the rings, all of the prongs that held the stone were like open and the stone had fallen out. So, like, there was metal bending. It just wasn't what they were trying.
Philip's like, that's too much. I'll do this.
I just need something tinier.
You're asking a lot.
Yeah, like a gold bar. That is a lot. And so then they all have dinner that night. And then, so all, like, there was instances of cutlery bending during dinner while they were at whatever dinner place they were. And even some of the Kent State faculty themselves attempted metal bending and were able to do so. So interesting. We're getting further from ghosts and more to, like, what can we do with our mind? So the physics department that had invited them there were really curious about how the table was being pushed up, and they looked for real world reasons and could not find any. And at one point, Dr. Frederick suggested that rather than using a table for the knocks and such, that they use a big metal slab. So they basically hung this metal slab from the ceiling. So it was like, it wasn't like they could get to it. And the sounds that it made in response were less like knocking and more like the sound of how metal sounds when it cools, which that's how the researchers describe it. But that doesn't make any fucking sense to me because I don't know what metal sounds like when it cools. But I'm assuming it's kind of more of like a ting, like a more drawn out kind of sound rather than like a sharp kind of like tap, if you will. And shortly after this, you know, they're talking to Philip as they do, and they say, like, hey, rather than knocking on the table, can you knock on other metal things? So he knocks on the pipes, and they verify that there was nothing going on with the pipes that would make sense for there to be knocking. And then he even, quote unquote, he, perhaps Philip, whomever, knocked on the bottom of the chairs that they were sitting on, which feels like an invasion of my space. So they definitely had a really interesting and fruitful experience at Kent State, which I thought was fascinating that they had other institutions engaging in this, especially like well-known colleges.
For sure.
Yeah. And like institutions in the U.S. were like, oh, yeah, we want to know about this. Right. Because who doesn't? So let's get into a little bit more about what all of these experiments mean in terms of the results. So when you're looking at the outcome, there's the outcome that they believe happened. And then there's how we might perceive it, because they're showing us this evidence and telling us this is what happened. We made up a character. We out loud, repeatedly, and in an organized fashion, made up various facts about this creature, person, thing. Because again, we've got Santa, we've got Silk, we've got Philip, we've got Lilith, we've got Venus. They are verbally describing all of the factors. And then later, there's raps that are forming in intelligent responses that are proving that whatever is creating the response knows that story and doesn't know things outside of that story. So they're saying, do you know this history that we didn't tell you? The answer is no. Do you know this history we told you? The answer is yes. And the table's fucking moving about. So this could provide evidence for the concept of tulpas, also known as thought forms. Again, one of my favorite fucking things to discuss. But a tulpa is basically like the idea that you can create an entity, aka a thought form, with your own mind, that you can imagine it up. We've got two episodes on it. One of it is called Tulpas. The other is called Tulpamancy. Both very interesting. If you've never heard of a tulpa before, please just go listen to them, because what can't the human mind do? So that is one conclusion that one could draw, that they created a tulpa of all of the different various things that they talked to, including Philip. And so the idea that Philip is created by the group, a tulpa. But what's really interesting is that that's not the conclusion that the TSPR came to. They took all of this. They took all of this as evidence of psychokinesis. And I can't not laugh at that, because I love the idea that they're like, it couldn't be ghosts, idiots. It's psychokinesis, obviously. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? You're going to tell me that you're like, no. It's not this woo-woo thing. It's another. Because in their writing...
But that's not woo-woo. That's science.
Yeah, but that's not woo-woo. It's psychokinesis, bitch. Are you fucking kidding me right now?
It's psychokinesis, bitch.
The idea of taking, like, one brand of woo-woo and being like, this is it, and anything else is kind of like a hallucination and you're just wrong. And, like, don't get me wrong. I find this fascinating. I like that they did it. But the attitude that they have in their writings is a little bit like, oh, how cute, how quaint, you think it's a ghost. No, darling, it's psychokinesis by committee, because that's what they fucking call it when a group of people are psychokinetic together towards the same end. So this is, quote, what they say. Okay. So in the New Horizons Journal, whose directors and officers overlap greatly with TSPR, they said,
"This suggests that most people have latent or potential psychokinetic abilities, which are either too feeble or too unchanneled to produce phenomena, unless combined with those of other persons. It seems that the combination of psychokinetic powers is achieved only by the group members directing their thoughts to some end."
And they take the fact of the raps only occurring when there was commonly held, like, lore. So they're like, were you married to Dorothea? A hard yes, right?
Yeah, because they all knew that.
They all knew that. And so there's some other random question that no one has agreed on. It's silent, or there's like a very light knock. That means that it's not psychokinesis because it's not the people at the table making the sound. And so just like, they're like, well, this is just psychokinesis, obviously.
I'm gonna tell people when I'm annoyed at them, well, your psychokinesis abilities are too feeble. And that's why.
Oh, that is like my new favorite insult. Like, you're probably just like too psychokinetically feeble to be able to do this. So
yeah,
consider your choices.
I think that's perfect.
Done. No notes.
And now moving on, let's explore that theory if they perhaps did create a tulpa. As a reminder, Lindsay brought up the tulpa, right? Or the thought form. And that's an entity that is brought into existence through intense and sustained concentration, visualization, and belief. So the group focusing on the same idea, like at the same time, they're chanting everything, looking at this picture. It may have pulled, let's say, their mental energy all combined to give their idea that they had an independent life and consciousness, which allowed it to interact with them. So based on this evidence, if it was indeed a tulpa, Philip was not technically a ghost, but rather an interactive thought form created by the group's collective imagination and emotional energy.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, all of them, like, sitting around this little baby card table, right? That's all they ever sat around in my head. Mm-hmm. Staring at this drawn picture of Philip, chanting his name, singing songs. All that energy came into one and created Philip.
My favorite part of this is imagining the setup for it.
Yes.
I want to know who in their group was like, we should come up with some chants to, like, lure him into talking to us. Like, we should probably develop some chants. Who was the one who started with that? Who was like, we should, like, peer pressure him to talk, or, like, whatever type. Well, I guess they think it's themselves, so for sure peer pressure. But, like, we should peer pressure Philip into talking to us. I guess my question is just, like, how do you get to
how
chants?
How?
Let's all chant together.
Yeah.
There's very few things in this world that will make me be like, chanting is the solution here.
Perhaps that's why we didn't get so much that we wanted,
you know,
from certain rooms.
We should be chanting more. More chants.
We should have been chanting more. Yes. So, like I said before at the beginning, there are a lot of theories, right? And so we're exploring a few of them. Let's talk about some more. Some speculate that the group may have actually been speaking to a different spirit or entity pretending to be Philip.
I mean, when you're right, you're right.
And we've chatted about this many times, but we talked about how to stay safe during investigations because that could happen. And just because the stories say someone may be there or a specific person doesn't necessarily mean that that's who you're talking to. And for this particular group, they could have given something or someone or whatever all of the information needed in order to trick them.
I know.
Without them even knowing that they were doing so.
I love that so much. Just like, whatever is like, y'all think you're psychokinetic. You for real. For real, for real. Okay. Okay. Philip Tuesdays, baby.
Philip Tuesdays. So could something else have been attached to one of them, perhaps? Or maybe this place where they began the seances in? And then, like, as they traveled around, it just, like, hung out with them?
I would also point out earlier, we used that description of psychic fuel, of the idea that they were all pouring energy into something very purposefully mm-hmm. and intentionally. And I personally believe that if you have a group of people who are doing something similar to that, whether they are in a haunted place on purpose or they're trying to bring a spirit to them, that is like a fucking beacon. It's just like the donuts are hot sign just like flashing. That's the image that I get, that they just kind of called to something by making that psychic stew, if you will.
I have the idea of they're in this like room, big room that they meet in all the time, and that there's some sort of entity that's just like sitting in the back of the room, just watching them. And they're meeting every week and they're like, you know what? This looks fun. I could be that for them.
Oh, yeah.
That could be me.
Well, yeah, like I could be Philip. I can, yeah, I could be Venus. Why not? I'll be whatever you want, sweetheart.
You want me to be a dolphin? Yeah. I'll be a dolphin today.
Like, again, they just were like, here's all the information. And perhaps the ghost was like, they don't really want to talk to me. Like, they're sitting at like a table, they're doing lab stuff, and then they whip out like the old school seance. They're like, oh no, like this is for me. You want me?
They're chanting, they're singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall. Like, they're, I want in.
Literally begging me to talk to them. I don't want to be rude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So another theory. It was all the ideomotor effect. And we touched on this forever ago in our Ouija episode. And what it is it's the phenomenon in which an individual makes involuntary physical movements in response to ideas, thoughts, or expectations. So the group, or maybe some of the members, could have been moving the table and knocking without even realizing that they were doing so. Because they wanted something to happen so bad, and they expected something to happen, perhaps their bodies may have been responding without them consciously knowing that they were doing so.
So almost they could have like had their hands down and accidentally like tapped on accident.
They could have tapped on accident, or perhaps their foot, or, you know, like there's so many different things, and it's hard to really, we'll talk more about the video in a bit, but it's hard to tell. There's so many people and you can't look at all of them at once.
And looking at footage of it, you don't know what would be ideomotor effect and what wouldn't be. When you're looking at the video, I think that if you see someone moving, it's either like what goes into your head is either ideomotor effect and that they don't know that they're moving, right? Like it's not conscious, or that they're doing it on purpose to create a false positive. I think that that's like what most people would think if they saw the movement.
Right, right. And then just to make this skeptical theory a little more on the unsettling side, if this is true, then the responses, Philip's personality, and everything was coming from them. So not physically, but somehow in the back of their mind mentally. Mm-hmm. So they, or one of them, may have created a personality without even realizing that they were doing so.
Well, and I think that that is what they think is really happening, right? That they are, the experimenters are like, this is psychokinesis by committee. So we're making the responses. We're the ones who are knocking. Our group efforts are versus like an individual who is psychokinetic, because they're like, it's everyone, not just one person, because they had every different type of configuration of all of them. And so I wonder, like, how they would reconcile that with today. You know, like, how would they account for that in a test for psychokinesis?
Right. Also, just as I was talking, there may have been some yelling. The boys are playing a video game and they're very into it.
I hope that they're winning. Just in case. In whatever way that means.
I hope that they're winning. Sounds like they're winning. They're screaming. But okay. So another theory that is just...
chef's kiss.
It's a lot. Okay. It's scary. It's perfect. It's all of it. So what if it was both? Now, if you think about it, they were in seance mode, right? So they for surezies could have been communicating with something or someone. But what if that something was also using them to speak through and they just didn't know it? So we've talked about it a couple times. And like when we go on investigations, sometimes we'll look at each other and set rules, right? And we'll all go, okay, if we're going to talk to something, you may use this device in my hand, like we'll describe it, or you may use this to communicate through. Or, for instance, with Lindsay's Big Mama flashlight, mm-hmm. you may use this device to drain some energy from if needed. But we're very open about what you may use and what you may not use, right? Where you say you may not use us to communicate through. You may use the devices. And so what if they didn't have this boundary, right? I never read anywhere that they like made this a boundary, that they couldn't be used to speak through. Mm-hmm. So what if someone or something was essentially using all of their mental energy that they were compiling for it and using it to speak through one of them or multiples of them. Maybe when they are involuntarily moving or like making a knock sound. What if it was the spirit of something using them to communicate? And it's kind of both. It's kind of a mind fuck.
Well, and I would even say, like, let's talk a real example of how we see this in our investigations. So when we do the Estes method, we have the person asking questions, and then we have the listener. And the listener is basically the receptacle for the answer. Typically, the answer is going to come from a spirit box, or it comes from an app that is on airplane mode that is tied to a sound bank that cannot listen to the other person because it's in a different space as the person asking the questions, typically. But you've got your listener, right? When we do the Estes method, we have an observer who is looking at the person who is listening. And pretty routinely, I see people doing things and like engaging in mannerisms and like movements in their body that are unlike them. Mm-hmm. For example, like one of the women who we investigate with, when she's the listener, she often does hand movements that are not what she typically does. And so like, I'll typically like sketch out her hands and be like, hey, is this like what you do when you're anxious or when you're nervous? Or like, I talk a lot with my hands and I typically tend to like have like an out motion. That's kind of how I talk with my hands. It's what's normal for me. But if I suddenly started like doing that very differently, like say I started having my hands out to the sides like this, that would feel weird. Say I suddenly started doing villain fingers, pointing them at you. You'd be like, fuck, that's Dr. Witten coming through, Lindsay. Like, I'm concerned, right? But my point, though, is that it's that mixture of an unconscious movement paired with perhaps something else. And so,
yes,
I think that that's actual, you know, possible. And when you're thinking of that protection component of like, look, I don't know what's right. None of us know, really. So if this was me doing this experiment, I would probably just like, just in case, account for the things that I don't even believe in. Maybe I would be like, yeah, like, let's make sure we're safe just in case. But they so thoroughly were just like, spiritualism, that this is what was, this is just another quote from the New Horizons journals. And where they're talking about this quite in particular is how spiritualists were like, guys, this is dangerous. They said that they received a small but steady stream of correspondence from spiritualists who warned us that we were dealing with mischievous spirits who could harm us, and spiritualists who advise us that we should get an expert medium to, quote, interview these spirits who are working through our characters and persuade them to go away.
So spiritualists were like, guys,
I beg my finest fuck, kind sir, you did a seance and then you got a seance like result and you're like, couldn't possibly be a seance result, couldn't possibly, it's psychokinesis.
Spiritualists are like, guys, come on.
They're like, you know, both could exist, but maybe you don't do ghost tests for psychokinesis. Why don't you go do psychokinesis tests, you know? But anyway, so there's also just like one other theory, and it is that it's fake. Because when you're looking at that video, they're awfully close. Like, they're awfully, awfully close. I'm not saying that all of it was, but I do wonder if some of it was. And I would especially wonder if in that first initial period when they changed, if in order to kind of like hype the group up and like re-engage them, if some of like the table lifting and things like that wasn't a little bit staged, or some of the knocks weren't a little bit assisted. So maybe it's that like in the beginning, maybe it was, and then maybe it wasn't, because the ghost was like, okay, I guess I'll join in. If you're just going to make it up anyway, I guess I'll be right. Philip. But like,
call me Philip.
Yeah, call me Philip. But like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The last theory is that it's psychokinesis and they were right. I just can't. Psychokinesis by committee. Get the fuck away from me. It's not this woo-woo thing. It's that woo-woo thing. But we mentioned this in the beginning of the episode, but it started in 1972 and it ended in the fall of 1977 because the researchers felt that there was like no further scientific progress that would be made that would be proportional to the effort that they would be putting in. So they're like, we've already proven psychokinesis. So we're done here.
Done and done.
But they also had like tons of other research. Again, they were doing UFOs. They had like a whole like premonition section. But you're right. Ghosts, call me crazy.
How silly.
Silly me.
So
it'll never stop being funny to me. Like, never, ever.
I just love, and we're going to talk about the video, I promise, but like after watching the video and just like seeing the people doing it, it just, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
So this experiment was pretty big, right? It is actually one of the most famous paranormal studies ever conducted. Mm. And I mean, it was years worth.
Yeah.
But I love that. So because it's so famous and exciting, it inspired some movies. And I believe there's more, but the two like main ones is The Apparition from 2012 and The Quiet Ones from 2014. There's also books about it and many, many interviews. Iris and Margaret detailed their findings of the experiment in their 1976 book, Conjuring Up Philip, An Adventure in Psychokinesis.
I'm sorry. Every time we bring up psychokinesis, it makes me laugh. I cannot. It's not that I don't think that that's a thing. It's just that simple principle of like, no, it's this woo-woo thing. Because like the mind, what a magical thing that we have. But like,
right, right. And we've said it, like, we don't know the human brain as much as we wish we did.
We don't know anything about anything. It wasn't until 2020 that we understood how anesthesia worked in the body. We were using it, just knocking people out, hoping for the fucking best.
But yeah, so the brain could be capable of a lot of things, many things. But I just love, yeah, it's psychokinesis, clearly.
Obviously. It's psychokinesis, obviously.
Right, right. And so this video that we keep talking about, it has the actual group participating in the seances. And it's kind of like a compilation, this specific one. I liked that it had everything. Like, it had a little bit of interview. It had a little bit of their seance. It had a little bit of what they thought they were doing, just all in one.
Yeah.
It is pretty old, from the 70s, so the quality isn't great, but it looked like they were having, like, the time of their lives. And at one point, the table is completely flipped on the ground, and their hands are all around it. Like, imagine the table, like, upside down with the legs up. And it's very hard to see what is going on under the table. I do want to say that, like, when it is flipped normally. Mm-hmm. Because you can see all their hands for the most part. At one point, like, the mic is kind of covering it. But it's really hard to determine where the knocking's coming from because you can't see everything happening off camera as well. So, like, it could be coming from a different direction for all we know.
Yeah.
And then when Lindsay and I were just watching it again for, like, I don't know how many times we've watched it, one thing I noticed is at one point, one of the hands taps and you see one of the other hands go over and, like, gently stop them.
Oh, I would not call that from gently. Tapping. Like,
well, it's not like they smacked their hand away, but they were like, no,
don't. And it's stop. Also because this is filmed for a television show, somebody else was in control of the cameras and where they were. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just an important note because when they were videotaping everything, they were videotaping it. They knew where the cameras were. They knew where the cameras weren't. They knew what angles, you know, hid certain things. So whether it was on purpose, idiomotor, something talking through somebody's hand.
Mm. Yeah, something. But it's a great video. Now, there was another experiment, and it was called the Humphrey experiment, which was a more modern attempt to basically repeat the results of the Philip group, but in a bit more controlled of a setting with modern tools. And this happened in 2004. And it was tied to a psychology dissertation with backing from a university. They created their fictional character with the name of Humphrey, and they used tools like temperature sensors, EMF meters, audio and video recorders, and kind of the same thing. They met regularly, and eventually there were weird feelings, cold drafts, small movements, and at one point the lights flickered. But for this one, each piece was heavily investigated, right? They had various tools. And so what they found is that the temperature change, the movement, everything that they got pretty much could be explained with the, I mean, exception of maybe the weird feelings. But with this experiment, like I said, it was more controlled and measured. And so it seems like the more controlled and measured it was, the less convincing. While with Philip, the more they leaned into it, the more real he felt. And so could it be that it was all just like fake results, right? Like the participants were making the movements, the sounds, everything. Or perhaps it is real, but only because they truly believed it and maybe a thought form was born. Or it was just, you know, a spirit hanging out in the area and they're like, this looks fun. Yes, I can be your Philip.
I'll be your Humphrey.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Me, myself, it's psychokinesis, bitch.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
I think something else was like, I can be Philip. Like, I'll be your Philip, baby. I love that. And I will never not find it absolutely hilarious that they're like, it doesn't work in this other way, where if it was psychokinesis, it would have worked, by the way. It doesn't work in that way. But we should try a seance. And then they get seance-like results and are like, ooh, but it's psychokinesis by committee.
But it's psychokinesis.
Which also, like, you had to pick the dumbest name and the most boring name, psychokinesis by committee. But why couldn't you call it, like, a psychokinesis party? Like, psychokinesis by posse. Like, something fun. Like, you know, just, it's like, it's again, it's that feeling of someone who's like, no, I'm a skeptical. And it's like, no, you're just closed-minded. You already made your mind up. You're not taking any evidence to the contrary. You're not more analytical because you've decided that doesn't exist.
That's fair.
What do you think?
I kind of think it's a little of both worlds, all worlds, like, so everything.
A little psychokinetic. By committee.
A little psychokinetic for sure-sies, yeah. But I think more, as in the other theories, perhaps, maybe they made a tulpa, right? Like, all that energy, them doing it forever, staring at the picture, like, creating him. But then on the other hand, yeah, I think it could be at some point something or someone was there and was like, I will be your Philip, I will be your dolphin, I will be whatever you want me to be, because they were bored. And then also, I do think, like we saw on the video, that perhaps they were making the tapping sounds occasionally themselves because they just wanted it to be real so bad that they were doing it without knowing. Like, I don't think anyone was trying to, like, mess up the experiment or, like, fake it. I think that they may have been doing it without knowing that they were doing it at certain points. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt there. But yeah, I think it's a few different things. Psychokinesis for sure-sies. I can't even say that, like,
yeah, exactly, normally, no. Right?
That's silly. But I really do think, like, there's a number of things it could be, and at different points even. Like, as they traveled around and as they did things, perhaps it was, like, different elements here and there.
Yeah.
All of them. Who could know? But we would love to hear what you think happened with this experiment. Is it a tulpa? Is it psychokinesis? Is it a ghost? Is it all of it? Is it a ghost speaking through them, making the ideomotor effect? Who can know? But we want to know what you think. Tell us.
Please. We want to know. I am excited to hear what people think about this one, because it is just so interesting. And I think that your beliefs on the unknown really, really flavor this. There's no way to not be biased by your own thoughts and opinions on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we also want your thoughts on the video. Because
yes, please.
We love it.
Please.
We love it so much.
Do.
And with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us. Thanks for listening, and as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. I can't do it in the other voice and do it in the song version. And so it was like you were talking at the end and I was like, I need to do this with every fiber of my being. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm a moving table, a knock on a pipe. I'm a Philip baby, even a silk. I'm a little bit. Ah, la, 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 la. A little psychokinetic.
Yes. That is the best.
Thank you. Thank you. One of my best. One of my best.
I have so many thoughts for this. It's perfect in every way.
Thanks. I try.
I've been rewatching that series again too much,
yeah.
By the way. So it's like perfect. That's also Lindsay and I's Velisca show.
It's our, honestly, I think it's our, like, we're a little scared comfort show. Like,
it is.
We're a little scared, but we're like, we're tough.
A little bit psychokinesis.
Ah, la, 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 la. A little psychokinetic. Okay, should we end? Oh, no, we're still talking. Okay, I'm ready.
People don't love when we sing.
Oh my God, yeah, they're not going to be happy. We'll put it at the end.
He was a fictional 17th century English aristocrat. Aristocrat?
So sorry.
Aristocrat.
The way I laugh. The way it just came out so bad.
You know how many times I've watched the Aristocats in the last like 2 years?
I love Aristocats. Marie is who I am in my soul. You know what I mean? Just all the time. I love her.
Also, do you think that perhaps you should say this whole entire section in this accent? Should you do it like this? Not quite Southern, but not Southern. Kind of British. A little lilt.
Higher, it's like a British Southern higher, person, and it's unhinged.
Higher than your normal affect. And like you're just a little loopy, you know? Just like this. We'll talk just like this, won't we, darling?
The program's not... What was it?
Oh, and from henceforth, we will be saying, if we don't want to get into a theory because it's just too long or too complicated, we will be saying from henceforth that the program is simply not long enough for me to explain it.
Just like, sweetie, paraphrase dying. It. You know?
I love it. I love it.
I will be talking like this intermittently, though. Just in case that other part is at the end.
Exactly. And remember, the environment, they're singing, they're chanting, they're having a great time. Right? It looked like a party to me.
Typical Tuesday night, baby.
Yeah, a lot like a party, but with a lot of fingers on a table.
If I love anything, it's a party full of fingers. We can't leave what? That in the end.
On a table.
If I love anything, it's a table full of fingers. You know what I mean?
It looks horrifying, honestly.
Again, yeah, too many fingers on that table.
For real.
I have no reason to believe this other than my own desire to. So much like the experimenters here, I will be doing this. I will be just categorically believing that the candy that they had was an ice cold fucking Werther's.
Oh my gosh. They're like, and Philip, hold on. Let me go to the fridge to get the Werther's.
No, Philip makes it cold. Ghosted Werther's.
Can you please make a video of a ghost Werther's?
Hell yeah. I still need to do my like cracking open a cold one video. I have to have Ben like take a video of me being like, at the end of a hard day, I like to crack into a cold one. And then I have to like go into the fridge, pull something out and then be like, and then have like a close up of my hand. And I'm like, an ice cold Werther's. And then I, it open.
Or sorry, can you say it with like that 70s accent, British, Southern British accent?
Yeah, yeah.
If there's anything I love at the end of a long day is a cold, crisp, hard Werther's. Oh no, it's, if I love anything, it's to crack open a cold one at the end of a day. And that cold one is a cold, hard Werther's.
I don't know why I'm saying hard, but a cold, hard... See, I did it again. A cold Werther's. Werther's.
Werther's. I love that this is going to be forever now. Perfect. Perfect.
It couldn't be ghosts, idiots. It's psychokinesis, obviously.
In a haunted place on purpose, or they're trying to bring a spirit to them. That is like a fucking beacon. It is like the hot and ready sign at Krispy Kreme just like flashing for whatever exists in the universe because someone is ready to talk. The microphone is on.
Is that Krispy Kreme?
Yeah, baby. No, Hot and Ready is for Little Caesars.
Little Caesars.
And Krispy Kreme just has the hot, but I got it confused once and I was like, they're hot and I'm ready about Krispy Kreme. So now I get them mixed up.
Oh, perfect.
It's Philip Tuesday. Where the fuck are you? That's not woo-woo. It's psychokinesis, bitch.